This episode is sponsored by Jabra. To learn more about the Jabra Sport Pulse Wireless Earbuds, visit jabra.com/embracerunning. You're listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Elena, and this is episode number 195 for March 29th, 2016.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Or I guess maybe we should say that to ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So, been a little bit of time has passed, mainly because we've been out of the country. So we traveled to London for just a little bit over a week, I guess. And we did do a race while we
of
were
course.
There. Right. Yeah. There was no option not to, right? We had to do one. So we did run the North London Half Marathon, which is basically what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a recap of that race, kind of going our first international race, we should say.
Yeah.
Officially. Yep. Or unofficially, why would that make any difference? I have no idea.
Yeah. Both, it's their first international race, officially or unofficially, technically, literally.
Cover all the bases.
Yeah.
And then, so that's the entire plan for today. Maybe we'll just throw in a few comments at the very, very end, just about our trip to London in general. Not sure what we have to say about that, but we'll see. That won't be specifically running related, but today, just a recap of the race. So let's get it started. North London Half Marathon is the race.
Mm-hmm.
That we signed up to do. It was one that we were just going to be in London and looked for a race, and that's the one that we found.
Mm-hmm.
And decided to do, and yeah, signed up. Price was pretty reasonable, if I recall.
Yeah, I think it ended up being, I don't remember exactly, but like 60 or 70 US dollars.
US dollars.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a pretty good price.
Right. Yeah.
So no issues there. Yeah, where should we start this?
So race was on a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty common.
Right.
For races to be on a Sunday. I know that they did have, or I think they had bib pickup like the day before, but I don't know what that looked like in terms of like if there was a big expo or anything. I don't believe there was because I don't remember seeing much about that, you know, like on their social media page or anything like that. But
because they were supposedly mailing out all. Mm-hmm. Packets.
Right.
And I think we actually mentioned on the last podcast that you received yours in the mail.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of waiting for mine.
Right.
And by the time it was time to head out to London, I still hadn't received mine.
Yep.
So I did not get mine in advance. Still don't know why you got yours mailed to you and I didn't.
Yeah. Although I do remember, I think when I specifically asked about picking up the bib if you were coming from out of the country, you know, how that would work. And they had actually replied and said that we would be picking it up on race day, that they wouldn't be mailing any international bibs, which makes sense. But mm-hmm. then when I got mine, yeah, then we're like, wait a minute. Okay, so we got to keep an eye out for yours, but it never came.
So really, just you getting yours was just a pleasant surprise.
And right.
Me not getting mine was what we expected.
Yep, pretty much.
So no
I just
surprises.
Had to remember to take it with me.
One extra thing to pack, I guess.
Yeah. Thankfully, it doesn't take up much space and isn't heavy. So.
Correct.
Yeah, so then race day... you know, you still didn't have your bib as of then.
Mm-hmm.
When we just figured we would, you know, we had a copy of the registration confirmation. So we just figured we would go to like the solutions booth area mm-hmm. or whatever they would call it and go from there.
Yeah.
So
I guess let's jump into race morning. We actually, took public transportation to the race. So we took the underground or the tube, mm-hmm. which is basically just London's subway system. To the race. We were staying in London and the race was a 9 a.m. start. We hopped on an underground train at 7:30 a.m. Basically
yeah.
the first train that we could possibly take.
Yep.
I think normally we say that we're kind of early birds, and considering I had to pick up my packet, I would have liked to go on a little bit earlier, but it's just because on Sundays, the trains don't start running as early as they normally do the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
7:30 was basically the earliest train we could take.
Yep.
Which put us at the race at about just 8:05 or something like that. We could have done buses to get there sooner, but it would have been one of those where we would have had to hop a bus, you know, an hour earlier than 7:30, but still only gotten there maybe a half hour earlier. So it just wasn't worth the time and effort.
Yeah.
And taking the underground is just super easy. So we did take the underground over to the race. The one interesting thing about kind of taking the train to the race and kind of just walking to the start area was I kept thinking in the back of my head, just kind of looking around, there's lots of other runners obviously taking the train and just around there as we're walking towards the start village, is I think what I'll call it. was I kept thinking, hey, everybody like brought a friend to the race.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is what it seemed like it, because you would see people who were obviously the runners because, you know, they got their shorts and their running shoes and, you know, they might already had their bib on, but then they were with somebody else who was just, you know, in jeans and a jacket and obviously not running.
Right.
But it seemed like lots of runners kind of brought friends or family that weren't running the race. And it just kind of struck me as not unusual, but just different from kind of races that we've seen here in the U.S. Now, I don't know if that just was random coincidence at the time that we were going to the race or whatever, because I mean, there was a lot of spectators at the start finish area throughout the morning, but I don't know that it was, you know,
like one spectator per.
Yeah,
runner.
It wasn't, you know, it didn't seem outrageously large in numbers, but that did definitely caught my attention as we were going to the race.
Yeah, I remember seeing that too. And it almost seemed like the majority of people had one friend with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was like, huh. Okay.
I was like, everybody brought a buddy. Thing.
Yeah, exactly. Which was really cool, but just not what. I'm used to seeing with other races.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got there around, I guess it was 8:05, 8:10 or something like that for the 9 a.m. start. And we kind of just looked around and started heading in the direction we thought we had to go because I had to pick up my bib. And
everything was pretty much around Wembley Stadium.
Correct.
Which is where the course finishes.
Mm-hmm.
And the start is just right outside of it, basically. Outside. So, yeah.
Did find a kind of the official race tents. Clearly marked there was two tents there for packet pickup, one for, I don't know what it said, but one was international.
Yeah.
And one was...
Was not.
Was everybody else? I just don't remember.
One was domestic? It didn't say that, but that's pretty much what it was.
Well, I'm trying to think what it said, but I don't remember. So international is the one that I remember. So I hopped in line, which those lines are kind of decent, but moved pretty quickly. And I was nervous. I'm like, oh, please have my bib. You know, I hope it wasn't a situation where they mailed it, you know, as I'm, you know, I crossed in the air with the mail as it was
exactly.
coming to the US or something.
Yep.
But they had my packet. Took all of about 15 seconds to get my packet. And no issues, no problems there. So that went very smoothly. And after that, it was just kind of mull around and time for me to put on my bib,
mm-hmm.
which kind of the first different thing was that I found really weird. On the actual bib, there was no holes in the corners.
For the safety pins.
For the safety pins.
Yeah.
So and it was just...
Yeah, it's just a rectangular bib with no holes.
So you just poke the safety
pin through the bib, which was not a big deal. But yeah, I remember noticing that the night before when I was getting my things ready,
mm-hmm.
and I was putting the bib on my shirt, and I was like, you know, looking for the little hole, and I'm like, oh, it's not there. And then at that point, we didn't know if it was just my bib that didn't get the holes punched out of, or that's just how all the bibs
were. They missed the hole punch machine.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a little unusual. It doesn't really make any difference.
Nope.
I would say it doesn't really help you when you're trying to put on a bib straight. You know, we always joke that, you know, it's impossible to get your bib on straight. And when there's not even, when you're poking your own holes, it's just another variable to kind of complicate the situation.
Yeah, I think the pre-punched holes make it a little bit easier to line up the bib.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, put the bibs on, just mulled around at the start. Didn't even really have a ton of time. Basically, I had to start making our way to the start-finish line.
Actually, we went over to the gear check.
Oh, that's right. You checked the bag.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot what they called it, but something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was gonna check a bag. And there's lines for, like significant-sized lines.
Pretty hefty lines.
Yeah, to check your bag. So I was like, oh, I better go get in line and... you know, take off my extra sweater while I'm in line and that sort of thing. So unfortunately on the way, I dropped my earbuds somewhere on the floor, which were not recovered. I also dropped my goo packet and my clip shot packet, which thankfully you recovered and found them later.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least we think they were mine.
Right.
They were the same flavors. So that's what I took on the, the race with me.
But. Yeah. Apparently nobody was interested in picking up your nutrition, but your earbuds was apparently attractive enough for somebody to pick up and take. I don't know. They could have returned it to a lost and found or something
maybe.
Either. So I don't know.
Which like, it's not a big deal. You know, they weren't expensive, you know, but I just kind of kicked myself for it because I hadn't even planned on using them.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, I'll just take them in case I want to use them. But I didn't even plan on using them, but then they were gone. So anyways. But yeah, I got in line and the line didn't move that quick,
mm-hmm.
but it, you know, we had enough time to be able to to check my bag. So that went smoothly, other than just kind of waited a little while. So,
right.
And then we started heading over towards the start line. So we did pass.
Well, I mean, back to gear check. Oh, I mean, okay. I guess the one thing I should have said at the top is, you know, this is our first race in the UK. And so
yeah.
I don't think it's fair to say that this race represents all races in
the
UK.
Oh, yeah, right.
But kind of for this conversation, we're going to kind of treat it like it does, just because it's our one that's and only experience with
right.
that. So
that's all we have to compare.
Yeah. So we might pick on it in that sense, but...
But we know that it's not necessarily representative of all international races and all UK races.
Right.
But that's just our only experience. So that's what we're using. Yeah.
So just wanted to give that disclosure to kind of frame things. And then back to the gear check. I mean, the one thing I noticed when I was looking, as I was kind of waiting for you, the gear check lines, or the queue, very organized.
Yes, agreed.
Which, as I'm looking at it, I was thinking to myself, okay, this is different, because here in the States, if, you know, as we start getting close to race time, gear check lines tend to get super disorganized, and it tends to, a lot of times, just people rushing up and literally, I mean, how many races have we been to, and you're just... literally just throwing your bag at somebody or throwing it in the back of UPS trucks or in
you're
the
like,
back.
Oh, they'll sort it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this seemed very opposite to that. It was just everybody's lined up and very organized. And you just, you know, I was looking at it from a distance, but you got up there and you just, you know, handed in your bag or whatever it was. Oh, you said they were feeling them or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I got up to the area to actually hand it over, they were like feeling the bag. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what they were checking for or what they would have felt. I mainly had clothes, but I think I also had like a water bottle in there. So I don't know like what would have concerned them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, other than something super obvious, like a firearm, you know, or something like that. But I don't know exactly what they were feeling for. But, and they didn't open my bag to look in it, and it was a black bag. So definitely not see through in any way. But yeah, they were feeling the bag. And then, I had already attached my tag to it. So, it was pretty much ready to go. But yeah, you're right. It was very like organized. And, you know, so I just stood in the queue, you know, and waited. But I was getting ready, like as time got closer to the start line, to like be ready to check my bag in there. Cause I've done that before.
Right.
The one I do remember, like Big Sur, I remember just tossing my bag in the truck, and I'm like, oh, hopefully it makes it to the finish line, you know, but, so I was like ready in case people started doing that. Nope. Never happened. So I'm like, okay, just gotta, you know,
be patient
and wait. Yeah.
All right. So continue. I kind of cut you off to go back to gear check.
Okay. So then we were heading towards the start line.
Mm-hmm.
We did pass the toilets.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think earlier is when we noticed,
right.
or you noticed actually what the queue was like for the toilets, which was another big difference. Usually what we're used to here is there can be however many toilets are lined up. There usually is like there's several lines, you know, that people are standing in. Like there'll be a line for these 2 to 3 toilets, and then there's like this line for like the next 4, and this line for like the next 4, like that sort of thing. And in this case, you notice that there was one line for all of them. Like it was just one major line.
Yeah, it was kind of one snaking line, and they had some barricades, and I don't even know if it kind of looked like there was somebody at the front of the line kind of
directing
traffic there and
overseeing,
where to go.
Monitoring.
So very different than we do here. Another difference, I guess you could say. I like the idea of one big line,
because
you know, we've all been in probably a porta potty line that, you know, you pick the wrong line, and just, you know, you pick the one where, you know, everybody inside the porta potty at the moment that you're the next person take, you know, 10 minutes a piece, and you know, the line next to you just flies right by,
right.
And you're like, oh, I chose the wrong line and I gotta get to the race. And at least kind of one big line, I think, makes it go a lot faster.
Well, then it's easy to tell too, when it avoids the whole issue of like that in between toilet where you're like, well, is that one mine or the line next to me? Or you're not really sure, do you go or do you let them go?
Yeah.
In this case, it's just whatever opens up next, that's yours. So We didn't have a whole lot of time though, so we skipped altogether.
I mean, I actually didn't make a porta potty stop before the race, which
I didn't
is
either.
Crazy for me. Just
same
because
here.
We just didn't have time,
yeah.
And I was like, eh, whatever, I'll find a porta potty on course. Which then in my head I was like, oh, there better be porta potties on course, you know. But yeah, regardless of that, so yeah, it was basically just time to head towards the start corrals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there really was corrals.
They're like. They're self-seated.
Yeah.
But they were like roped off though.
Separated.
Yeah. And it was based on your, what you would think would be your finishing time.
Mm-hmm.
And so for example, like 1:45 to 2 was like one section.
Right.
And that was roped off, but there wasn't anything official. I don't think, right? That on your bid, it was just,
for sure, no.
Yeah.
The one thing was that when I walked over there towards the corrals was a bunch of people were kind of doing a pre-race.
Oh yeah.
A warm up stretching routine. I don't know what it was. Was somebody leading it?
Yes, somebody was leading.
Somebody was leading it.
It was a thing that was like part of the race.
Okay.
Yeah, that they were going to do a warm up ahead of time.
Because I was like, I didn't notice anybody or hear anything of like leading kind of this warm up, and I'm like, wow, everybody's doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are these people all coordinated? You guys all just do the same warm up all the time?
Right.
I'm so super confused right now. But okay, that's an interesting explanation. I'd rather go with my idea. Just everybody kind of just does the exact same warm up. No. All right.
Yeah. That would have been funnier.
I agree.
Yeah. But yeah, so we headed over there and split up and headed to our designated corrals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They did have pacers.
That's right.
I'm not sure how many, but a fair amount,
mm-hmm.
you know, and with varying finish times. So I do remember seeing that.
Now, the one interesting thing about the pacers, they all wore a backpack.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of hydration pack style, very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I say backpack, don't think of a big backpack.
Yeah.
But a very small hydration pack. And the kind of little flags or signs, whatever you want to call it, with the pace were kind of stuck into the pack. So they didn't actually have to carry, you know, most races that we have here, you know, it's a stick with a little poster or sign at the top that has the pace. But these were just kind of into the pack, so they didn't mm-hmm. actually have to hold them.
Right.
So I was like, hey,
which I thought was a great idea.
A cool idea, as long as you don't mind running with the pack and it's comfortable enough. So.
Yeah. Since we're talking about that,
okay.
the one question that I had when I was running, because you know, you just think of random stuff when mm-hmm. you're running. So, and I was like, oh, those packs are a really good idea because you don't have to be running with the stick, like holding it in your hand or that sort of thing. But one thing I've seen done before at other races is if they're having an off day, like anybody can have.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they basically stop pacing officially,
right.
they will just hold the sign down,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just so you can't see it, that sort of thing.
Right.
So in this situation, if you happen to be having a bad day, what do you do?
Well, you could just take it out of your pack.
And do what?
Just hold it down? Or just throw it away.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I would do. Throw it away or fold it up. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, that was just one of my random thoughts.
Find somebody with a marker and just put a big X through the...
Right. Or just keep changing the time.
Yeah, lower it down every time. I'm like supposed to be the 2.
You start off with like 1:30. You're like, 1:45. 2.
Just keep going down the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so...
We're in the start corrals.
Start corrals.
Yep.
And I guess the race started.
Mm-hmm. No national anthem.
That
kidding.
Is true. No, they did not do that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
race started. And it was a slight uphill.
At the
very
start.
Just very slight, but definitely uphill to begin with. And actually, you know, kind of used to like that, you know, the people ahead of you start and then you move up and you're walking. And then usually you don't start running until close to the start line or maybe just past it because it's just so congested. But it's funny in this case, and I think we had the same experience. There was like this almost 180 degree turn
mm-hmm.
before you get to the starting line.
Right.
And, because of that turn, it just like kind of opened up and it
right.
wasn't that congested. So people started running like right then, but it was uphill. And so everybody around me started running. I'm like, we're not even at the start line yet. Like, I don't want to start running yet. You
right.
know, it's uphill, but I mean, it was fine.
That's what I was thinking.
I was
like,
kind
stop
of funny.
Running. This
right.
doesn't count towards your
right.
time.
It's up there. Save your energy.
That's what I was thinking.
But I started to run too. And I was like,
yeah,
darn
I
it.
I did as well.
Yeah.
I know for me, I kind of started in the 2 to 2:15 corral or group or whatever you want to say. It was kind of a long walk until I actually got to the start line.
Yeah.
Kind of took a while. Mm-hmm. So,
and then it was kind of up a ramp.
Yeah. It was just kind of a long walk. I mean, I don't think the whole section there was too wide. So, people were kind of spread out lengthwise on the course. So that's what I think accounted for kind of the long time. Not that it mattered in any way, but I'm just saying.
It was chip time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, course.
I
guess we can kind of go over that.
Well, I'm going to say, I guess, one thing before.
No, you cannot.
Well, I'm going to anyways.
Okay.
I did something different on this race that I don't know that I've ever done for a half marathon. Pretty sure I've never done this for a half marathon. And that was, I didn't run with earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
So no music, no podcast, nothing in my ears.
And that was on purpose, right?
On purpose.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever done that for a race at all. For sure, never a half marathon.
I think you've done it maybe for a race, but I don't think a half marathon or longer.
And for sure not a marathon. Because yeah, I do like listening to music or podcasts or whatever during a race. But I went without it this time on purpose. And that was just because I wanted to, I guess, focus on the experience of, hey, I'm running in London and this is different. Let me kind of take in all the sights and sounds to the maximum maximum ability that I could possibly be. So,
and not like be distracted in your music.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I didn't want to lose my earbuds like you didn't.
Thanks.
So I was, so something different for me for that.
Yeah. I also ran without earbuds. Not just because I lost them, but because I had planned to not do that for the same reason. So,
yeah. So I didn't go with earbuds. Had I decided to run with earbuds, I would have definitely worn my Jabra Sport Pulse wireless earbuds.
There you go.
So gotta thank our sponsor.
Yep.
Good time to mention it, I guess we should say, because they've been sponsoring us for a while and we appreciate it. And they've got a pretty good product. So I guess I'll talk about that now.
Sure.
So the Jabra Sport Pulse wireless earbuds, we've been telling you all about them. Great wireless sound. Good sound if you're listening to music, if you're listening to podcasts. Nice, clear, clear voices. You can understand us if you're listening to us. Works out kind of well. But the best part about them is getting that heart rate monitoring direct from the ear.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminates that need for a chest strap. No cords that you can get caught on your elbow, or you got to, you know, run through your hat and down your shirt and into the back of your running shorts. Nothing crazy like that. They are completely sweatproof and weatherproof, designed to withstand tough running conditions, including rain. It easily connects to your iPhone, Android phone, Bluetooth, with Bluetooth or NFC pairing, and works with all your favorite running apps, or you can use the dedicated Jabra Sport Life app. And as we've said before, you can get exclusive offers and product discounts by signing up at jabra.com/embracerunning. And as we mentioned, we love giving free stuff away. So please sign up. We gave one away in January,
mm-hmm.
gave one away in February. We're giving another pair of the Sport Pulse wireless earbuds away in March. So you got some time to sign up, and we'll, if you're the lucky winner, you'll get one in the mail for free. So definitely don't miss that opportunity, because we'd love to hook you up with some free stuff. So thanks to Jabra. This is where it starts. All right. Let's continue mm-hmm. with our music-free race, I guess, for both of us on this one. You were going to talk about the course a little bit.
The course, yeah. So it started, like we mentioned, just outside of Wembley Stadium. Headed, I'm not sure in what direction. I'm thinking, based on the map, it was northeast. I think.
Sure.
If people care.
I'll go with north. Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it basically ran along mostly residential streets,
mm-hmm.
Some business commercial type areas. And then the turnaround was at Alliance Park, which was another stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty much just kind of traced back the route that you were already on. And then kind of did a big, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, but kind of did a big loop to get into Wembley Stadium
mm-hmm.
And finish in Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, basically a big out and back course.
Yeah.
Not particularly scenic in
yeah,
any way.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'll take a weird stance. It wasn't really scenic in any way, but I kind of enjoyed it just because we got to see some parts of this London area. I don't even know exactly what cities we were in the whole time or what this area is even called. But it was nice to see some random residential areas. It was nice to see some random parks along the mm-hmm. way. It was nice to see some random business stuff. We actually ran by the Royal Air Force Museum?
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing that.
Which only rang a bell because, you know, before I went to London, I'm like researching all the museums and sites to see and stuff like that. So it was kind of cool for me or for us, you know, when you're traveling to London and you're out there and you're doing what I always say is, you know, you're doing the tourist thing and you're mm-hmm. kind of seeing all the big popular touristy attractions. It's nice to kind of just hit some random residential streets and get to see a little, you know, a little bit of different scenery, a little more local scenery kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So I definitely enjoyed that aspect of it. And then, you know, you mentioned that turnaround was at Alliance Park, which it's a very small stadium. So, I mean, we're going to talk about Wembley, which is obviously a huge stadium. Alliance Park, where the turnaround was, is a very small local stadium. I don't even know what it's for, to be honest, because I didn't look it up. But we actually did get to run on the track there.
Yeah.
So you actually do the turnaround there by coming in one end of the little stadium there, and you get to run almost a full lap.
Yeah.
Around the stadium on the track. So that's kind of cool. I liked that aspect of it.
One of the best turnarounds I've had at a race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Versus
just a random, you know, okay, you're going to turn around on this block, you know, and make like a U-turn
right
here.
Right.
Yeah.
They did have two kind of jumbotrons there in the stadium. That's what I'll call them. The first one had a timing mat nearby. So it actually had names and I guess your split time as you crossed the timing mat, which as I ran by, I never saw my name pop up. So I don't know.
I think they were popping up when we were coming in.
Oh,
which is not when you couldn't really see the screen at that time. So yeah.
Still very cool to kind of have.
Yep.
And then the Jumbotron at the other end of the stadium basically just had a live video feed of the runner. So I think you could actually catch yourself running on that screen if you timed your look at it correctly. Yeah. So,
and there's some spectators in there too.
Yeah, there's a few people.
Yeah.
Which was nice. So yeah, I definitely did like that turnaround. You know, stadiums and stuff like that are kind of cool. The tracks was a nice running surface, I guess, to run on.
Yeah, it felt
great. A little sketchy kind of getting in and out of the stadium there.
Right.
Just because you got to go through some weird paths, but not a big deal. What else? That was a turnaround. Yeah, anything else on the course? I mean, we'll talk. We can save the end for the end.
Yeah. We'll save the end for the end. Just thinking about the course, then when you mentioned that it was a little tricky getting into Alliance Park just because of the, like, the surface and that sort of thing. I did notice that there were a lot more signs that I'm used to. Not a lot of signs, but a lot more signs that I'm used to along the course, letting us know when there was like something coming up. I think, I don't remember what word it's, I can't remember if it was like hazard or something. Mm-hmm. There was something that would be posted on a nearby pole, like if there was like a speed bump or something else like that, that was something that you could easily trip on, you know? So I remember seeing a lot of those signs, which I'm not used to seeing on a regular road race, but that was helpful, you know? So I also didn't see that many people like course marshals on course. Hmm. Like there's a lot of, I mean, it was clear to me where the course was, and there was, cones where there needed to be cones. There was officials, you know, helping block off, you know, like a main road where there needed to be, but I didn't see as many like course marshals that I'm used to. If that's course marshals, if that's what you call them. Or like on every sort of like little side street, there's somebody there making sure you don't go that way.
Right.
Yeah, I saw a lot less of that.
Okay. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Which I don't think they needed to be there, but just an observation that I had.
That would be different from what we see here.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Should we talk about aid stations?
Yeah. So we did read the information before the race. You know that for the most part, there was going to be a water station roughly every 2 miles, you know, like around this. So that's... I think that's plenty.
Pretty standard.
Yeah, pretty standard. They're all going to have water. They did say they were going to be in small, I think, water bottles. Sports bottles, I think is what they said. So like, oh, that's different. That's kind of cool because we're used to just the regular cups, you know, that you try to drink while you're running and not drown yourself in. So, and then I think there was going to be, was it two or three stations that were also going to have an energy drink, which was this Lucozade, which is something that we had not been familiar with prior to that race at
all.
Never heard of it. Right. So, we knew that wasn't something we were going to drink on course just because it's something that we weren't familiar with and never had it and don't know how your body's going to react. So we were going to stick with the water. They did not have any, stations that had anything else in terms of gels or blocks or bars or food. But that was clearly spelled out ahead of time. Yeah. Yeah. And so then once we were on course, aid stations or water stations, I should say, were pretty much where they said they were going to be, spread out pretty evenly. There were toilets at every single one. So that was good. And then they did have the water in these they're basically little plastic water bottles with a little sports cap on the top. So super easy to drink from.
Super easy.
Super easy.
So much easier than a cup.
Way easier. And not even just to drink from, but even just to grab from the volunteer.
Right.
You know, because sometimes with the cups, like you drop it, you miss it, you put your finger in it, you squeeze it too much and it's gone. You know, these, it's like you could maybe lose a little bit of water by squeezing it when you grab it,
mm-hmm.
but so much easier to, one, get from the volunteer and two, just drink as you go. You mm-hmm. don't have to stop at all
right.
to drink from it because it's just this small, you know, like little nozzle, you know, from the sports bottle type.
Yeah. I mean, personally, so, I loved getting bottles instead of cups.
Yep.
Now, I don't know. It definitely seemed more wasteful in a way because I think there's more water in the bottles than you would get in a cup during the race.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
you know, I'm getting this bottle and I never came close to, I mean, they're small, tiny bottles.
Right, right.
But I mean, they're still, I never came close to like finishing a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, it's always kind of
before discarding it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I guess I could have just kept it with me mm-hmm. on the run, but, I don't know. I decided not to do that, I guess. So I would just have my water from the bottle and then myself and everybody else, you would toss the bottles. They did have kind of big bins. Think of, I guess the best way to describe it is a big dumpster. That actually wasn't really a dumpster, but
yeah.
kind of big dumpsters where everybody would just basically just toss their bottles, as they were finished with them. And they kind of had, you know, two or three of those strung out just past the aid stations where you mm-hmm. pick up the water. So basically everybody just grabbed their bottle, drank what they want, and then they just toss their bottle into the bins or on the ground. You know, everybody has the greatest name, I guess, running by.
Right.
But yeah, I really did like the bottles. It made it much easier to drink. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it just seemed kind of wasteful. I mean, I guess you're kind of wasting more water than you maybe would with cups. Maybe not. I don't know, because
right.
at a typical aid station with cups,
I there's think water half, all over the ground.
Half the water ends up on the ground anyways.
Yeah.
So, and then I'm just assuming that they're recycling all the plastic bottles. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not enough of an environmental expert to say how much of a environmental impact having bottles versus cups would have. But mm-hmm. It definitely made it easier from the runner's standpoint.
Right. And it did give the option that you mentioned, even though neither one of us exercised this option, was to be able to continue to run with that bottle
mm-hmm.
for a longer period of time. You can't really run with your cup. You know, like for like, oh, I'm going to run with this for the next mile, you know,
right.
but you could easily do that with this bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see a couple of people do that, not throughout the entire race, but like at an aid station. And I just, you know, like a mile later, I'm like, oh, they still have their bottle, you know, so it's kind of nice to have that option.
Yeah. The flip side to that is I think races that just have cups that we're typically more used to, you know, the aid stations tend to look like disaster zones because the floor just ends up getting covered with cups,
mm-hmm.
Which I still don't know how that happens.
Well, you spill. You're trying to drink and you
spill.
No,
but actual cups on the ground.
Oh, cups on the ground. Gotcha.
Because I'm always like, when you're done with your cup, at least throw it off to the side.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
If you can't make it into
not
a garbage
in the
can.
Center.
Not just drop it in the middle of the
yeah.
road. And so the road was much cleaner.
Yeah.
Not so much debris. Now, there was the occasional bottle that people just, I guess, dropped in the middle of the road.
Right.
Or I think,
but it was pretty rare.
Pretty rare. The flip side of that is one bottle is probably more dangerous than 100 cups if somebody steps on a bottle mm-hmm. while running versus a cup.
Right.
But it did make the roads kind of through the aid stations much, much cleaner, less debris covered than you kind of would with paper cups. So.
Yeah. And I think maybe part of that too is just that they had those huge bins that you can toss
mm-hmm.
them into versus regular sized garbage cans or garbage bins
right.
that we're used to. You know, maybe if we had the huge baskets or dumpster type thing that they had, maybe we would see less cups.
I don't think so.
I think we'd see less, maybe not okay. significantly so, but, and then you mentioned like just kind of the hazard of having, one of these water bottles on the ground versus like a paper cup that mm-hmm. you just, if you step on it, it's flat, you know, like
right.
that's the end of it. I did see, one instance where there was a bottle on the ground that, wasn't empty and, but not, instead of stepping on it, somebody accidentally kicked it,
mm-hmm.
Which they were fine. It kind of threw off their gait a little bit. But then when they kicked it into somebody else ahead of them and it kind of like caught their foot. And so they were a little, you know, like off balance. Nobody right. fell or anything.
Right.
I don't think anybody was injured, but it was one of those things where you're running and something just kind of hits your feet from like behind because it's somebody accidentally kicked one of those,
right.
those bottles. So yeah.
Yeah. I think the bottles that I did see kind of in the middle of the road, I think were probably more likely from somebody who threw it at the bin and it just bounced off. They
yeah.
missed, it bounced off back into the road. Or I think I saw some people kind of, you threw it to the curb and
mm-hmm.
it just kind of bounced off the curb back into the street.
Right.
So I know a couple times when I threw mine, always, actually, thank you. I have good aim. I usually made them into the bin. The one time there was no bin, I just threw it on grass because then I knew it wouldn't bounce back into the middle of the road. But yeah, it was cool. I liked the bottles. The other part of that I would say is that I got to the first, when I got to the first aid station, grab my bottle of water. I was going to continue running. I wasn't planning on walking or anything like that at that aid station. You know, having the bottle makes it way easier to drink on the run.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see anybody walking at this aid station. I was like, oh, okay. That's kind of weird. Usually I would see
somebody
walking through an aid station. I got to the next aid station, took a bottle of water. I didn't see anybody walking through the aid station.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right. You know, and then the third aid station, nobody walking through the aid station. I was like, all right, this is definitely different because I'm just so used to people walking, you know. I mean, not everybody does it, but there's always some people who walk through aid stations.
Right.
I mean, I know we have at least one friend who always walks at aid stations because they have a hard time drinking from a cup while on the run. So they just walk.
I mean, and they walk, you know, briskly,
but they
do stop running.
But yeah, these early aid stations, I didn't see anybody walking. And then even towards the end of the race, I think I saw a couple people walking through aid stations maybe when they grabbed a bottle, but way fewer than I would normally see at races here. So I don't know if that was a UK thing. We don't walk through aid stations, or it's just the fact that this bottle makes it so much easier that I don't have to stop and walk through the aid
station. Or for whatever reason, this particular day, people didn't just walk through aid stations.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't really realize it at the time, but when you mentioned it afterwards, I was like, oh yeah, like I don't think the only people I saw walk at an aid station were people that were stopping to use the toilets.
Yeah.
Everybody else was running through. I mean, maybe you slowed down a little bit to grab your bottle, but, you know, maybe take some nutrition or something, but I don't remember seeing anybody walk through the aid station like you would when you're trying to drink from a cup and maybe somebody walks a few steps to be able to drink from it.
Right.
So, yeah.
What else?
I'm trying to think.
I mean, I guess to kind of carry on with the same theme, I think I saw less people walking just in general at any point during the race than I would normally see.
On a regular road.
At an equivalent race kind of here at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, this is kind of anecdotal, just comparisons. There was a little bit of walking, I think. I walked three times, I think, during the race, which was over the last 3 miles of the race because there was like three hills towards the end of it.
Yeah.
And
there's
so,
one significant one, like
yeah.
like mile 10 or 11 or something like that.
So a couple of those hills at the end, I just walked part of it. And like I said, I think there was one that was specifically tougher than the rest. And there were some people walking at that point. But I think still, like in comparison to races here, you know, comparing equal size type of race, I think there was definitely less people walking in general at this race than kind of back home. So just a comparison.
Yeah, I agree. And I noticed that during the race too. This wasn't a flat course. It wasn't, you know, the hilliest race we've ever done.
No.
But as far as like a road half marathon, it had some good sized hills in there. You know, nothing super crazy.
Yeah.
It had a couple of them. But yeah, I remember the first couple of hills, you know, just kind of looking around. I'm like, nobody is walking at all. Where what I would be used to is maybe one or two people like kind of power walking it, you know, and then like at least towards the beginning. And then maybe towards the end, there'd be a few more people that are actually walking up those hills. But and there was maybe in this case, there was like one or two at the most.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I remember noticing the same thing when I was out on the course, you know, looking around. I'm like, nobody's power walking or power hiking these hills, which is totally fine. But it was just different. So.
Anything else out on the course about the race?
Oh,
to get into the finish.
Well, when we were, I had thought about it and then I forgot and now I remembered again. With going back to the water stations, I know I noticed this with the first couple and I don't think it held true for all of them. But, you know, usually there's the tables with water, you know, that's what we're used to in our situations, usually cups. And then the volunteers are like in front of that and, you know, they're getting the cups from the tables and they're in between the cups and you essentially, right?
Okay.
So they're handing you that. So, I think the first two water stations for sure. I don't know beyond that. There's actually like a rope between the volunteers and us. I don't know if you noticed that.
No.
So let's say, for example, all the volunteers were busy and I wanted to go get my own water. I actually wouldn't have been able to physically go over to a table and grab water because it was like roped off.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which never was the case, but I just remember thinking like, oh, they're on the other side of the rope, which is something I'd never seen before. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was plenty of volunteers handing out bottles. There was never an issue at any of the aid stations. They did a great job. So,
some spectators on course, not
many.
With the exception of, like, not talking about Alliance Park or Wembley Stadium, but just along the other part of the course, not a lot of people.
No.
There were some, just kind of throughout. Definitely more towards the end, like in the last mile, you know, than anywhere else. But obviously that's closer to Wembley Stadium and that sort of thing. But there's a couple people. There's a couple of, I don't know what you want to call them. I think they call them like entertainment groups or music groups or that sort of thing. Because they did mention there was going to be some music out there. I don't know what that was going to look like. I think what it ended up being was just a couple of different drumming groups with different types different types of drums, you know, and different type of music.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
going
drummers.
From like steel drums to like the taiko Japanese type drummers.
Right.
Yeah. So just varying types.
Yeah. I remember the drummers at the Alliance Park at the turnaround.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
I think that's the one you got a picture of.
I did.
We did post some pictures, by the way.
On Facebook. Yeah. So you can catch that.
You want to take a look at that, including the little water bottle. So.
We talked about it at LA quite a bit with people kind of just spectators and people along the course kind of giving out support, kind of homemade support stations, I guess you want to see. Not really any of that. I saw one person handing out some cups of water.
Yeah.
Kind of the unofficial aid station. That's all that I saw. Didn't really need it. It wasn't a hot day. I mean, we haven't talked about the weather. It was
overcast. A half marathon.
It was cool.
Yeah.
No issues there, but not the same amount of support, I guess you could say, that we might see here at some races.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I saw one person with like orange slices.
Mm-hmm.
And had I been on the right side of the road, I would have had some just because. And then I did see some kids giving out what I think is candy, but it's not candy that I've seen before. So I did not partake because I wasn't sure. But that was pretty much it there. Not a lot of signs
That's
from the
true.
Spectators that were out there, you know, like, you know, go daddy or, you know, mom or whoever, that sort of thing.
Or worst parade ever. No.
Right. Or go random stranger, you know, that sort of thing. So a lot of people cheering, well done, while you're running, which is something that I'm not used to hearing here either. So that was pretty cool because it just made me feel like that I had already accomplished something, even like at mile like 3 or 4. I'm like, yes, I've already accomplished something, you know, versus hearing that like just at the end. So, yeah, that was pretty much the course. I think 2 or 3 different places did have the Lucozade, which the bottles weren't, as from what I remember seeing, not as small as the water bottles.
Right, bigger.
But not like the big Gatorade bottles that we would see here sometimes. So, and I did see a lot of people getting it. I saw some, but I don't know if that's because it just wasn't that hot and I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know what it's normally like. So
I actually wanted to taste it, but by the time I thought of it, I had already passed the last.
I did the same thing.
That actually had the sports drink.
Right.
So I was like, oh, missed opportunity. And I just assumed they'd have some post race. So
yeah, I was thinking the same thing because I got to the point where I was like, well, I was like, I'll just give it a try. Like on the, I think there's one more, you know, with Lucozade. And I was like, I'll just grab it and try it because at this point, it's so close to the finish that if it messes up my stomach or something, then it's fine. But yeah, the last station already passed. So I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. Won't give it a try. So.
Okay, well, let's get to the actual finish.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually do come down a nice long straightaway, which at the end of your view and at the end of this nice long straightaway, you do see Wembley Stadium, which is, as I said before, I think a very cool looking stadium from the outside. They had their kind of digital billboard, jumbotron, whatever you want to call it. That's on the outside of the stadium. I know it was rotating through stuff. I forgot some of the state. You know, it said North London Half and said something with a hashtag, had sponsor names.
Yeah. Welcome runners. Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So it was kind of cool. So you're running down the straightaway and you're kind of seeing that at the end of the street. You could actually see the top of Wembley Stadium probably from a mile and a half or maybe 2 miles away from the finish line. So it was one of those where you kind of know where you're going.
Right. Like I'm headed that way.
Yeah. But you kind of come down this long straightaway and there's lots of spectators on either side of the kind of the barricades on the straightaway, and there's lots of people on either side also who have already, at least by the time I came through, had already finished the race and had their medals and walking home, I guess, or to where I don't know. but yeah, it was definitely a cool little straightaway kind of with the stadium in the background. And I guess myself and I think you probably had the same assumption that, oh, you know, it's nice straight away and you're going to run right into the stadium because we know the finish line's in the stadium. That was turned out to be incorrect. So you actually run kind of towards the front of the stadium and then you hook a left and you start running around the outside of the stadium,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, it's always that thing of a, it's kind of a bummer. She's like, oh, I thought the finish line was right.
Right.
You know, I thought it was much closer than this. What's going on? So, you actually do kind of run, I don't know, on the outside of the stadium for maybe a quarter of the loop around the stadium might be the best way to describe it.
And then you also kind of run outside the stadium, but within its like borders, mm-hmm. where kind of like behind the scenes.
Oh, when you run through it?
Yeah.
Well, you make the right turn and actually go into kind of the belly of the beast, if you want to say, for the stadium. And then you kind of run on the inside of the stadium, like you said, in the back corridors.
Yeah.
For a little bit,
which
is weird.
Which you probably normally wouldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking if you're there for an event. Yeah. Cause I remember going through and I'm like, oh, this kind of reminds me of like the Disney races where you're running through the back lots and mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah. Kind of reminded me of that.
It was kind of weird because the 13-mile marker was there, which is just kind of a random indiscreet corner inside the stadium.
I never saw it.
Oh, really?
I kept looking for it and I never saw the, okay.
Yeah. It was in there just in like a random concrete corner there.
Okay. I kept looking. Yeah.
Very unassuming.
Oh, which by the way, they did have mile markers,
mm-hmm.
which I assumed were going to be kilometer markers, but mm-hmm. we're not.
Right. Yeah. I have no idea what I expected. I didn't have any expectations on that one, but
yeah.
Yeah, I could see your expectation for kilometers. And then again, it is a half marathon.
Not that I was disappointed in any way. Right. Just, you know, yeah.
Makes it a little easier.
Right.
Yeah, so you kind of run through the inside of the back corners of the stadium, and then you do emerge actually inside the stadium, and turns out to be quite a view. Stadium looks mm-hmm. awesome from the inside.
Yeah.
Nice bright red. Red? Orange?
Yeah.
Red or orange? I don't know what all the seats are in the stadium. And you do kind of a little half loop there. Do you do a half loop in the stadium?
Almost.
Maybe
half
a quarter loop.
Yeah.
And then you actually just run into the finish line. There was spectators in the stands in the stadium.
It was
kind
pretty
of
loud
on.
And bright in there. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, you know, it was just exciting like when you actually go in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very much an exciting, I think, finish
like, yes,
line.
Yes, they're cheering for me coming down, you know, the stadium.
And then did they have a live feed up on the...
They did.
The Jumbotron?
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, that was kind of cool. Was there music? I can't remember at all.
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
Okay.
There could have been.
Maybe.
There may not have been.
Yeah.
I know they were announcing finishers coming through because they had like not timing mat. Well, I guess it is a timing mat, mm-hmm. but you know, so that your name pops up and stuff.
Right,
they were announcing people as they were getting to the finish line. So I do remember that part.
Yeah. So you kind of cross the finish line. Like I said, very cool stadium to kind of run into and definitely a very festive environment. And I really like the whole finish line and stuff. So yeah, you cross the finish line, you get your medal handed to you, which I guess is a good time to mention the medals. Pretty cool ribbon. The mm-hmm. medal itself is pretty cool. Yours actually was missing some color on it, which was kind of funny. We didn't realize.
Which I didn't know it was missing because there's like little runners on it.
Uh-huh.
What is it? Three of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. And on mine, like one of them has like a colored shirt mm-hmm. essentially. And then one of them had like a third of his or her shirt colored and the rest. And I just thought it was supposed to be like that. And then we looked at your medal. I'm like, oh, they're all supposed to have like colored shirts, but it looked fine.
Yeah. So you're faded a little bit or
right.
missed the coloring process a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get your medal and then they're kind of pushing people through the finisher chute there. And, I know lots of finishers actually just made a right turn and kind of went into the stands. And you can kind of just go into the stands if you were waiting for somebody else or just want to cheer other runners. But if you kind of continue down the line, you basically just get shoveled right back out of the stadium. So you kind of go back into kind of the behind the scenes part of the stadium, the interior, pretty boring concrete lined. And then that's where you got your post-race drinks if you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You got your t-shirt because mm-hmm. it was an actual finisher shirt.
Yeah.
So you got it post-race. Which you would think it would be a crazy mess to get your shirt. And I don't know, it took me all 10 seconds to...
Yeah, it wasn't crazy at all.
The shirt sizes were just in order and I just kind of guessed like, oh, I think that's medium over there. And I was like, large? She's like, yeah. I'm like, cool. And she just handed me my shirt and I continued on. And I think there was a couple snack things there.
Yeah, they actually... Did you mention they hand you like a plastic bag first?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Which is really nice because you do get a bottle of water like within the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they kind of funnel you out of it, They give you a plastic bag, which has like, I think it had like a couple of little snacks in there and promotional type stuff in there. And then you get like a banana or something and, the shirt. So it's nice because they can just throw your shirt in there. Mm-hmm. And then they had the Lucozade.
Yeah. So yeah, we did get some.
We did get some. Yeah. Which by the way, some pretty good flavors. There's like, I think mango passion fruit and Brazilian guava and raspberry. So I didn't try the raspberry, but I did have the other two and actually pretty good. So anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of go through, you get all that stuff kind of typical of a race, and then you kind of get shot out to the outside of the stadium.
Right. So, yeah, so before you know it, you're like, oh, that was, I'm out of the stadium.
I'm done. That's it. You kind of missed the chance. So if you wanted to hang out in the stadium, you needed to basically cross the finish line, get your medal, and then head into the stands.
Right. And not go get your shirt at that time. Yeah. But stay inside, which is, it was totally doable. But, and they actually did have a couple of zones or, that said like picture zone. I don't know if you saw that.
I think I saw a sign. Didn't care.
Which is kind of where they wanted people to go if they wanted to take a picture of like selfies or of the stadium just people weren't just stopping all over the place.
Getting it.
So I did get a couple of pictures in the stadium, but then made my way out thinking that it was going to loop back for me to come back inside.
Come back in. Nope.
But it didn't loop back in. Yeah. But I'm like, that's all right. So
I mean, it's kind of weird in that, you know, you basically just finish in the stadium and then they basically just send you right out of the stadium.
Yeah.
The flip side to that is it's, you know, some races that we've done where you actually finish kind of in a stadium environment, they tend to be a little bit of a cluster.
Yeah.
Like people, you know, there's not enough room for people to go and, you know, all the post-race nutrition's all on, you know, big long lines and stuff like this. So this, I don't know, I was fine with this. You know, it was pretty well organized and you had the choice to kind of stay in if you wanted to at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know if you ended up walking out the stadium if you could go back in.
Yeah, I didn't try that. I didn't try that.
I have no idea if they would have let you back in or how that would work. But
yeah, and if you wanted a year check bag, you had to leave.
Yeah, because that was all outside.
It's all outside. Yeah. Oh, before we move on to that part, with the shirts, they are Brooks technical shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So think of like maybe what you would get like at a R&R race.
Okay.
But unisex. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. So bummer for you.
Bummer for me. Yeah. But yeah, not a huge bummer.
Okay.
Yeah, so it kind of spits you out to the...
Outside. And you went to go pick up your bag, right?
Yep. Very short line for that, but they're very short queue for that, but there was one. Got my bag, no problem. And then they had post-race massage that was included. I don't remember seeing that anywhere. Not that I particularly looked for it, but I know that they did have like a company there doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had... They didn't call it a family reunion area, but I think it was like a meeting place or something like that, so that you can, you know, ahead of time decide where you're going to meet with people. And they also had a couple of like food vendors, like food truck type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that area wasn't that busy though. We noticed it when we were leaving and it wasn't that busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although close by there's other coffee shops and,
yeah, there's a whole
shopping area.
Shopping,
yeah.
I don't want to call it a mall, but some shopping
center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is right there next to Wembley Stadium. So it's funny. There's actually an ASICS store right there and there's a Nike store right there.
Yeah.
So, if you hated your shoes, you can go pick some new ones up, you know, 10 minutes after you finish if you wanted to, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was, I guess, pretty much the race.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to say anything about your race personally. I mean, neither one of us were there shooting for times or anything like that. We were just out there to kind of enjoy the experience of running a race in a different country and kind of seeing what that's about. So
I don't have too much to say other than without going into too much detail, we had done a lot of sightseeing a couple of days ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had walked a lot.
Yes.
A couple of days before. So that was like at the starting line and then like the first mile of running is probably the most tired my legs have ever been at the beginning of a half marathon. I was like, wow, my legs are really, like, they weren't sore, but I'm like, they're really tired. And I just remember thinking like, okay, you know, just going to enjoy it. But yeah, you're right. Neither one of us was going for, you know, a PR or anything like that. I kind of just wanted to finish under 2 hours just because, you know, randomly picking a time. And I thought that would be doable. And then once I started running, I'm like, well, I don't really have to make it under 2 hours. So I started off, pretty slow pace wise. And actually ended up feeling a lot better as the race went on. And so sped up and I think I had probably like the best negative split race ever at any distance. I ended up finishing like in 151. So, and still felt like I had some pretty good energy afterwards. So, but yeah, the beginning I was just like, oh my gosh, my legs are tired. So that's just the one thing, I wanted to mention. So yeah, that's pretty much my race. Didn't really have any issues other than losing my headphones. you know, water was easy. I think I had like one gel. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything on your race that you want to mention specifically?
No, I mean, like I said, I wasn't shooting for a time. I think I ended up finishing in 212 or 213, something like that, which ended up being a bit slower than I thought I would run. The one downside to not running with earbuds was I normally get my pace and information from listening to my earbuds. And, you know, I get that from Run Meter on my phone. And so I didn't have that. So the nice thing was I paid no attention to my pace.
Yeah, no, that's good.
The bad thing was I probably let my pace slide a little bit more than I would normally because I just didn't know what my pace was. But yeah, I was just kind of enjoying the surroundings. And yeah, I was joking that, you know, I kind of woke up with sore legs from kind of all the walking just the 2 days before or whatever it was. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of different. You know, I'm expecting to be sore the next day, but not the day of the race beforehand. So, a little bit different.
Yeah.
But overall, it was a really fun race. I think they did a great job. Super great organization. I mean, there's not too much to say. I mean, there's really nothing negative to say about the race.
Nope. And we're just pointing out some things that are different compared to what we're used to seeing.
Yeah. Maybe because it's a good conversation for us.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's just kind of nice to have like something to compare, you know, comparison. Weather-wise, I think you made a quick mention. It was overcast, I think, the entire time.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw the sun until like we were getting ready to leave. You know, and then the sun popped up. But yeah, it was overcast, cool, but not freezing cold. I think the night before, I was worried that it was going to be way colder than I was expecting. And like I hadn't brought enough clothing. But I did wear a Salomon beanie for the race, which I normally wear like just a regular hat. But I had brought the beanie. Yay, so glad I did. And it was nice because it just covered up my ears. But yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was good.
Weather-wise, it was like perfect.
Yeah. I guess that sums it up, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd recommend the race for...
If you're in the UK?
Yeah, exactly.
Or you happen to be visiting randomly?
Yeah, yeah.
It is part of the... I think they call it the Vitality Run Series. So I think it's just part of a nine race series over there. So if you can't do this one, you can actually do one of the other... events, I guess.
Yeah, I remember seeing people with race shirts from an event that had taken place like in February, I think, another Vitality race. It was either in January or February of this year that I remember seeing people running with those shirts. So
yeah, so I'm assuming if you do any of those, it's going to be a very similar experience. So a good option if you're visiting the UK or if you're in the UK, definitely check out the series. If you live in the UK, you're probably already familiar and we're not telling you anything new at all. So
yeah, they did list I think a 3-hour limit in terms of they were going to be opening up the course based on that.
And we did not say this is the only distance that there was.
Oh, right. There's no other distances. There's no 5K. There's no kids race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the number of finishers we believe to be around 5,600. Interesting enough, I think you tried to look at the last place finisher.
Yeah.
And their time was like 2:30.
2:34:08.
Which is...
was the slowest finishing time I could find.
Right. Which no guarantee that we found. The slowest official time, but that seemed pretty fast, actually, for the last finisher of the race for a 5,600-person race.
Yep.
So,
but maybe that's the last official finisher.
Yeah, I don't know if that is the last finisher. Kudos to everybody who ran the race because everybody did a really good time, I guess.
Yep. That's why nobody walked through the aid stations or on those hills.
They didn't have time for that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we got to finish. We got to get out of here. We got to get on to other things. So, yeah, that's the race. That was the experience. Good times, I guess.
Yeah, it was a good experience. It was fun.
So I guess we'll call it there for kind of the run portion of this. I don't know if you want to say or if we want to share anything else from just our London trip in general. We'll kind of just take a minute or 10. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we have nothing
to say.
Who knows
what this turns into.
But
if you're not interested in the non-running aspect.
Non-running, you can just click off now.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think for both of us, this was our first trip to London. Turned out to be a very, very fun trip. A very tiring trip.
Yes.
We
were tired every single day.
We did walk a lot.
Yeah. We got a lot of time on our feet as far as training goes.
Yes. Yeah, very, 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 very tiring. I think the day that we actually did the half, because we were kind of, I don't know, you started paying attention to your phone and kind of how it was tracking mileage just walking.
Right, just out of curiosity.
Throughout the week. And I think the day of the half marathon, I think we ran the 13 miles and then ended up walking around another 10 or something.
Yeah.
So ended up being a very tiring day.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we can have a whole discussion about how accurate
that is.
That measurement is. Right. But
but in comparison to the other days, that was one of our higher mileage days, just the walk portion of it.
Right.
Exclude the race. That was one of our higher mileage days. Yeah. A lot of days were like 8 miles, 9 miles, 10 miles. I think we had one like almost 12, but yeah, it was a lot of walking.
Yeah. So lots of walking. We actually did get one other day in where we actually did go for a run, just around London. We did, I think, 4 mile run or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Over by like London Eye and Big Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ran across the bridge there to the other side of the river. So that was kind of cool. I'm glad that we
really
actually got a chance to run over there, just a regular kind of training run. Probably would have ran more, except for the fact just so tired from walking around.
Yeah.
That I know for me personally, it wasn't, you know, hey, I just walked around 8 miles yesterday. Do I really want to get up early this morning and then go for a run and then walk another 8 miles? So that didn't really happen too much, but
yeah, I did get a few other runs in.
You did on a treadmill.
On the treadmill.
Yeah.
Because I just, not to say that I didn't want to run outside, but I didn't feel comfortable running in a city that I wasn't that familiar with by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I did get a few other, I think I got like 3 or 4 other runs in. So I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
And then actually hopped on the bike, stationary bike, and then did some weights actually. So I was pretty happy with that. Aside from the 10 plus miles we were walking every day. So.
Yeah, it was a fun trip. We kind of did all the typical touristy things you would do in a visit to London, London Eye and Kensington Palace and
Tower of London,
and
Tower Bridge,
lots of museums, which credit to the country that most of them are, a lot of them are free,
right,
which makes
which
it kind of nice and easy. Outside of that, London is very expensive to visit just in general. So anything else you want to say?
Nothing that's like
pop into your head.
Yeah.
Fine.
I mean, it was a great trip. We saw a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We were very tired, but it was totally worth it, you know, and we purposely were trying to make the most out of every single day. So,
right.
We got to see a lot of cool stuff, learned a lot. There's just so much there, you know? So
now a couple of things that I learned about myself in case I ever want to return to London to run the London Marathon. I would have to go to London probably 3 days before the marathon, at least, just to deal with kind of the time change and the jet lag issues, because I think my first two nights in London, I got maybe 4 hours sleep, I think, the first two nights.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those because
of the time change.
I think I was up at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m., and I could not sleep after that the first two nights. And so I think if I was ever going to go do the London Marathon, you know, I think the safest thing is probably go out 4 days before the race.
Yeah.
You know, if I really care about the race.
Right.
You know, in terms of performance, go out 4 days before.
And I'd probably be okay with 2 days before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, I was definitely tired coming back, but, and it's been tough. We've only been back a couple of days now, and I don't know, I'm tired right now. So I still haven't quite adjusted back to the time.
Yeah.
But a little bit of a learning lesson, I guess, if I ever, you know, take an 11-hour flight again. And do a race somewhere. So it was fine for the half, but if I was doing a full.
Right. Yeah. Other things that you learned about yourself, or was that it?
I think that was that's what I was getting to. I think that was it. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I guess we'll call it there.
Yeah. And we might think of something else for the next episode and, you know, add that towards the end. But
yeah. Or if anybody has questions about London, I feel like at the moment I'm an expert.
You might hurry up and ask before you forget everything.
You might not want to ask me in 6 months because I might have forgotten half this stuff. But if you have any questions about London, you can reach out and we can help you out with that. I think we definitely reached out to people that we know that had been to London before and kind of giving us advice. So I'd be happy to pay that forward. But only, like I said, while it's fresh in my mind.
Right.
In 2 years, don't ask because I probably will forget half of this stuff. But it was very cool. A lot of fun. Definitely recommend it. I guess this made me more interested in returning to London someday to do the London Marathon. Because I think it would just be cool to kind of do the London Marathon. And then it'd be nice to go back for the marathon just because I can actually focus a little bit more on the race than
having already been there and seen the sights, basically.
Yeah. So it'd be a situation where I think if I was going there for the first time and doing the marathon, that I'd feel the pressure, you know, the days before, like, oh, I got to go out sightseeing and do stuff because, you know, this is my first time here and I want to catch stuff. Where if I go back another time and, you know, I'm kind of more focused on the marathon, I can, you know, rest and relax a little bit more on those couple of days beforehand and not worry so much about cramming stuff in. And then I can, you know, post-race, just do some of the fun stuff that either I want to go check out again or do some of the things that I didn't get a chance to do on this trip. So, it'd be very cool to go back someday to do the London Marathon. It's just the problem of you got to be able to get in the London Marathon.
Right. So. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well,
One more thing. Sorry. Yes. I just thought of something. We did look and find a running store.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Just to check it out. Not really any different than what we have here. So.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we picked the wrong
store. Maybe. But we just kind of wanted to check it out. Oh, and that made me think of something that we also noticed for people that were carrying hydration during the race. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot more of a certain type of bottle that we don't really see here much. Yeah. Not that I've never seen it here before, but just don't see it much. And it kind of has a, I don't even know how to describe the shape of it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. Okay. But it's like a,
it's plastic, but it's kind of like in a circle. And so you kind of hold it by, you know, your fingers kind of go through the middle of this plastic circle.
Yeah.
I'll look for a picture, see if we can post it someday.
Right. Cause we're horrible at describing this bottle. So yeah. But yeah, I saw that actually quite a bit there. Yeah. So. Just a random observation.
Yeah, random nutrition that I saw other people have was all much larger in size than we had. You know, I'm used to goo packets. I saw a lot of people with very...
Yeah, the ones I saw, the packages were a lot longer.
Like almost candy bar-ish size.
Yeah, stuff. I saw that too. And I don't know what the consistency was like. I don't know if it was like gel consistency or not, but you're right. I did see more like bigger packages on the ground, like longer packages. So, and then I did see somebody step on an open package and what shot out looked a lot... more watery than like gel consistency. So,
okay.
Yeah, I have no idea what the names were or anything like that, but I do remember seeing the wrappers on the ground. So,
right. Actually, that's the one thing. We did go to the running store. I didn't go look at the nutrition section there.
Yeah.
I don't even remember seeing a nutrition section there.
They did have a small one. I looked.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Might have been interesting to go over there and kind of pay attention to what was actually on the shelf, but I didn't do that.
I didn't see any wrappers on the shelf that matched the ones that I kept seeing at the race.
Oh, okay.
Because I was curious about like what it was, and I didn't see any of those. So, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I guess that's going to do it for this week. I think we'll be back with another episode before our next race. But I guess our next race is in about a week. We're doing the Sactown 10 miler in Sacramento, California.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's next on the schedule. But I think we'll be back with kind of a more typical episode, kind of before catch up on the news and all that stuff that we've kind of been missing here lately before we do that one.
So, yep.
All right. That's going to do it for this time.
The website for the podcast is embracerunning.com. You could find us on Facebook at facebook.com/embracerunning. Send us any comments, questions, or feedback at feedback@embracerunning.com or leave us a voicemail at 925-400-7223. If you enjoy the show, give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, embrace running.